Hey, welcome to this week's The Real Estate of Life with Kevin Riles. I'm your host, Kevin Riles. We continue with Investor April with my friend Brandon Cheatham. We're going to talk about Airbnb rentals, short-term rentals. This is a different way to rent out properties, and it's becoming much more popular. So I want you, my great listener, to listen to this and learn about how you can make money renting out your properties to Airbnb. So DJ, hit that music, please.
Support for this program comes from the Digital Broadcasting Network, presenting podcasts and web series from everyday people who have an extraordinary passion to make the world a better place.
And welcome back to The Real Estate of Life with Kevin Riles. This is your host, Kevin Riles, and this is Investor April. And I am so excited that I've had thus far two investors to talk with me about their investment experience. And my goal for this year is to help you build wealth in real estate. And my goal for this month is to really have testimony month in the tradition of the Black church. For those of you that are not kinfolk, I always have to explain my colloquialisms. There's a time in some church services or Bible studies where the minister will go over stories and say, does anyone have a testimony? And the person will walk up to the front of the church and the pastor will give them a mic and they will tell them their story. And the meaning behind that is it's one thing to learn it from the book, it's one thing to learn it from the pastor telling you, but it's always more powerful to have a testimony. Did I do that in my right preacher voice? I don't know. So this is, to me, Testimony April, and coming to the front of the church this week on The Real Estate of Life with Kevin Riles is my good friend, fraternity brother, Brandon Cheatham. He is dialing in all the way from... That's a long pause.
London.
So okay. Leonard is like, finish the sentence, brother. So he's dialing in.
I don't know if I was supposed to, jump in or not.
From London, specifically we're in London. So just in case people think we're not really dialing in from London, tell them not your address, but what part of London are you in?
So I'm calling in from Pimlico, which is an area inside of Westminster, inside of central London, UK.
So, if you're familiar with
London, I am postcode Southwest 1V3JY.
Wow. So just in case y'all think we're trying to, you know, he's in the next room and we're trying to be international, The Real Estate of Life with Kevin Riles is an international, worldwide known podcast. We got people calling in from Canada a couple weeks ago, now from London. You just never know where our guests are going to call in from. So I want to welcome Brandon Cheatham to our podcast. Again, friend of mine, client of mine. I got him started in real estate as far as helping him. So before we get to that, Brandon, tell them a little bit about your background and what you do for a living and ultimately how you ended up in London right now. Why are we talking from Houston to London?
Okay, so I'm an engineer by background, working oil and gas. I'm out here actually doing some project engineering work, so high level engineering closeout, contract management, procurement, some commercial activities for development in Kazakhstan. Moved here from Houston, born and raised Port Arthur, Texas, grew up between Texas and Louisiana, graduate of Prairie View A&M University, BS in civil engineering. So I've been out here for a little bit over a year, moved here in January 2017. And how I met Kevin when I was actually moving from New Orleans to Houston. I was looking to acquire a primary residence as well as an investment property. And from there, Kevin has provided a lot of real estate guidance, has been a great real estate mentor. So I'm extremely happy that I was invited on the show to kind of share maybe some of my experiences or my testimony. I've been called down to the front of the church.
Well, and at the end, we're going to collect, just like the church that we're going to pass this place twice, once for missions and the next one is for tithes and offerings. But as far as your real estate background, I think I count, since I've known you, and this is the kind of the transaction before me, that you have owned four properties. Is that correct? So I want to kind of take people down your real estate resume, starting off with your first property and where you are now. So what was your first real estate purchase? And then walk us through where you are now.
Okay, so my first real estate purchase was in New Orleans, Louisiana. So I was living there at the time. I purchased a condo. And I don't know if you're familiar, or, you know, whoever is listening or watching with New Orleans. So it was a condo pretty close to Bourbon Street. So Canal and Rampart, for my folks that are familiar with Louisiana.
I know it from Bayou Classic well, yes.
Okay.
I partook on those corners. Yes, yes.
Within walking distance of all the activities. So I purchased a condo, and I knew the city had some plans for some development, et cetera. At the time, I was really looking to transition from renting a place to actually owning some property. Purchased that condo. I had that condo for a little over 2 years. And at that time, while I was in New Orleans, I had met a group of individuals that were doing home flips. Okay. And had a group of passive investors. So I got involved with them, did a number of passive investments in East New Orleans, different home flips. And I transitioned to Houston. And that's when I met yourself, and I ended up purchasing my primary residence in Houston, as well as the rental property that I had, which was a student rental in the Prairie View area that I was renting out to students at the university. So I had the, you know, my primary residence, had that rental property, went on to participate in other passive investments, ended up getting involved with another group. We started doing some private loans to other private investors, really trying to bring together kind of like-minded individuals, young professionals that were looking for an avenue to passively invest in real estate. Got involved in several real estate groups. From there, I started getting involved in, you know, looking to acquire small multifamily properties, continue to invest passively and actively, and then over time, just as my full-time work schedule changed, my primary residence transitioned to a short-term rental. And then when I moved to London, still have that short-term rental, end up executing a 1031 exchange, acquiring another short-term rental with two units. And from there, so still active investor and passive investor, doing short-term rentals, looking to get more involved in, you know, larger multifamily properties, also looking to acquire single-family properties. So my experience has been more on the buy and hold side, right, as well as in short-term rentals. Not so much in flipping or wholesaling, or maybe, you know, some of the different avenues in real estate. But real estate has been a great avenue to me, and I guess kind of personally one of my overarching objective, you know, really providing an avenue to kind of build some generational wealth. And so real estate has been a great kind of foundation for me.
So I wanted to ask you, your first condo, what year did you purchase that condo?
I purchased my first condo in 2013.
So and reason I asked that is, so from 2013 to 2018, which is basically 4/5 years, you've done quite a bit. And so one of the things that I always tell people is that you can go as fast or as slow in real estate as you like. It really depends on obviously what's available, capital and things of that nature. So your resume in 5 years is some people's resume in 20 years. Doesn't mean those folks are going slow or bad, but this is just a point to people out there that you can go as fast or slow, and it depends on life circumstances. Your transitions have caused you to have to sometimes decide to make sale or release or whatever the case may be. So some of your stuff, although planned, was also kind of unplanned, it sounds like, as well.
No, that's correct. So I've always had interest in real estate, you know, thus me starting to invest passively And then, you know, through kind of work transitions and relocations, you know, different opportunities have come up for me to get more involved in the active side, either was with my primary residence, utilizing as a short-term rental, but even also, you know, as I sold properties and bought new properties, also being able to take some of those funds and whether it's a 1031 exchange or purchase some additional rental property. So real estate, and I would say kind of my full-time activities through work, have been able to work, you know, pretty well hand in hand, parallel thus far. So both have kind of presented different opportunities, and I've been able to kind of leverage each within real estate.
Well, so one of the reasons and the primary reason that I brought you on today is because what you have been doing here lately with your properties. And we had a long conversation while you were home during the holiday break, and also purchased another property during that time. And you've kind of found another way of getting income out of a property. And this is fresh on my mind because I'm selling a 10-unit apartment complex, or what was an apartment complex in Galveston. And those particular buyers are experienced Airbnb investor buyers. And so they plan to renovate that 10 units that's on the seawall in Galveston and do only short-term rentals. And both of these gentlemen have at least five or six short rental properties that they do in Austin and in Houston with Airbnb. So I wanted to talk to somebody that is actively using their properties on a short-term rental model more so than a long-term model. So tell me why you decided for your primary residence here to do short-term versus a normal one-year or two-year lease to someone.
So several reasons. So one, I was transitioning work assignments. So instead of working a normal 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, I was actually rotating to position offshore. So I was working for 2 weeks and I was off for 2 weeks. And it got to a point in time where I was doing quite a bit of traveling. I wasn't spending as much time home, even when I was off. I had a friend of mine who had just started utilizing or doing short-term rentals. Spoke to him about Airbnb. I mean, there are different multiple platforms. I think Airbnb is probably the one of the most popular ones. I said, man, you know, I think this is something I could do pretty easily. You know, I'm only gone for 2 weeks at a time. I had, you know, individuals in place. I wouldn't say necessarily a team at that point in time, but individuals in place that if something, an emergency came up or there was something I needed to take quick action on, I could easily get those
folks
individuals on the phone.
By individuals, it means his retired dad who he does not pay anything. But go ahead.
I do. So I had a resource that was capable and available, which happened to be my father, who was had some handyman skills as well, and you know, had a number of contacts because he had invested in real estate and very familiar with homes and et cetera. But I really kind of tested my comfort level because, okay, I'm offshore for 2 weeks. I'm going to have essentially, you know, strangers in my home, you know, but I think the opportunity was definitely there, at least to have, you know, another income stream, you know, even if it took care of, you know, a few expenses. You know, it was still helping me kind of meet my goals, and started doing it for about 3 months or so. And I mean, the upside, the numbers were very favorable.
So let me stop you there. So you decided to do it while you were still here, going back and forth between offshore and here. And that's kind of how you tested it. How did you get over the whole stranger danger, out there that people are, oh, someone's in my house or in my bed or whatever the case may be? What was the psychology behind that?
I think so. There's a couple of things. So I think one, you really kind of have to gauge your comfort level. And so with me, you know, I had some personal items in the home. So there were certain parts of the home where only I or my father or, you know, my neighbor had access to. So, you know, I changed several of the locks, made sure I had different systems in place. And to where I could actually gauge who was coming in and out of the home. So that's one. Also, I would say Airbnb, just speaking Airbnb,
right.
You know, specifically, is a pretty close-knit community, which I've learned, you know, over time. And they tend to police themselves very much so through the review system. But because whether you're hosting or staying at an Airbnb home, you very much so want to maintain the health of that ecosystem. So if you're a bad actor, they will out you very quickly.
And that's on the host side and the stay side, right?
That is correct. So whether if you're a guest that is staying in an Airbnb and, you know, you trash the place or, you know, you don't treat it as your own, you know, the host will very much so leave a review, but also has, you know, support to contact Airbnb if they need to, you know, there are some consequences or some costs associated with the actions or what took place to make sure that that individual is no longer able to stay in certain locations or, you know, potentially they're not able to participate as a guest or they're viewed as an unfavorable or unwelcomed guest in a sense. And as a host, there's a process to where you can very much so filter and vet the guests that come into your home. So just because someone sends you a request doesn't mean that they're automatically going to
It's not
to
like
be
booking
a
hotel. You got to take me regardless, right?
Correct. That is correct. That is correct.
So let me ask you this, Brandon. When you decided to do this, how did you go about pricing your rental and kind of give me like for the your I almost gave your address out. I'm sorry. For the property, the townhome, the townhome, primary residence, how did you price it and what's your minimum stay? So if someone was to book now, what would be their, you know, their cost and how did you come up with that cost?
Yeah, so there are several data points that you can use for pricing. I was like, ultimately it's up to the host to determine the pricing. And I probably sound like I work for Airbnb. Right
yeah,
now.
Like
it's not the case at all. I mean, there are several research platforms that can provide you data points.
I know one of them is AirDNA. I've heard of that
That's
one.
Correct.
Yeah, AirDNA.
That's correct.
AirDNA.com, That's correct. Folks. AirDNA.com.
Also, you can just do, honestly, kind of your own reconnaissance. I mean, you can go on Airbnb and see, okay, what other Airbnb listings are in your area? And, you know, what are their price points, depending on the time of the week or the month? To use that as a data points. Airbnb now on the platform, they have a smart pricing option where they'll try and give you some feedback as far as what they feel is the appropriate price. You may agree with it at times, you may disagree with it at times. For me, I think it's a little bit kind of using those data points, but also a little trial and error. And there's some strategy behind the pricing. I mean, in my opinion, if you're a newer listing, you may say, okay, I want to have initially have a lower price point to drive some traffic, make sure I'm building some positive reviews, which is there's a lot of emphasis placed on reviews and short-term rentals. You know, if you're a five-star property, you're more than likely to get more views or more requests than an individual that may have a 2.5-star or a 3-star property. So there could be some strategy there, but over time, once you build a reputation, your property is viewed as, you know, credible, it's clean, it's accurate, it meets the expectations of guests, then I think you have a little more flexibility in your pricing and you're able to increase their price point, depending upon the time of the year, activities that may be going on in the city, et cetera.
So right now, if I want to book your townhome property, what would it cost me to book? And how do you have a minimum amount of stays, night stays?
Yeah, so I would say on the low end for the property in East Downtown, on the low end, if it is, you know, early in the week, you could book the property anywhere from, you know, 120 to 130 a night.
Okay.
On the low end.
And give
on
people
the high end.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. On the high end.
And I guess kind of give some background to the property. So this is a townhome, two bedroom, master bedroom, master bath. Then you also have a guest bedroom with a private bathroom. You have a half bath, about 2,300 square feet, lounge area, et cetera.
And it looks out over the city, folks. You can go out at night and feel like you on top of the world because it looks out over the city. So that's a plus that it literally looks out over downtown Houston. So
yeah, so from the back patio, you have a downtown view. It's very walkable to George R. Brown, Minute Maid, BBVA, et cetera. On the high end, on the weekend, you could see that property listed for, as much as, 170, 175, 250 plus, a night, if not more. I mean, the highest I probably have rented the property has been in excess of, $400,
$450. And that was during an event, though, right?
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. Now, there was an event in parallel taking place in the city. So there was a little supply and demand there.
Right. That's called Super Bowl. We can say it. Yeah.
So Super Bowl is a good example. I take that back. Super Bowl is an okay example. The only reason I say Super Bowl is an okay example because in that particular event, you had a number of individuals who had never listed on Airbnb or short-term rental platforms. And in my opinion, probably saturated the market a little bit, so it drove the prices down. Now, typically different events, et cetera, when you have events, what the platform allows you to do is to, increase your price point to where you can, make some additional income. But there's also challenges as well. So just as events come and go and you can increase the price point, you have to be very conscious that that same home during Super Bowl or during, Houston Rodeo or a big concert in Houston at 200 plus, hypothetically speaking, mm-hmm. on a Friday night, probably isn't going to be the same on early in December,
right?
Which is, there's probably a low travel season. The weather isn't favorable. There are no events going on. So you have to keep that in mind and be conscious of that when you're doing your planning.
So let me ask you this, and then we'll get on to something else about the Airbnb or short-term rental platform. On average, since you've been gone more now than a year, percentage-wise, how often are you booked, in a year's time frame or in a month's time frame if you want to market to a month?
Yeah, so the property that's in East Downtown averages 80-85% occupancy.
Okay.
The two units that I actually never even got to list on Airbnb, and the reason I say that is because I executed the 1031 exchange on Friday.
So hold up. So I want to give people perspective. So he has his primary residence who he's been doing Airbnb short-term rentals for more than a year and decided that he wanted to buy another investment property. So we sold a fourplex in Prairie View near the university. And we did what's called a 1031 exchange. If you don't know what that is, go back about 15 or 20 episodes. I spent some time on 1031 exchange because the real estate of life provides that level of education, or Google it. But with that being said, we did a 1031 exchange, took those funds and bought another property kind of in the university area of Houston. And so that property had a two bedroom, one bath, I would call it bungalow style home in the front, and then apartment in the back, garage apartment in the back. And so that's the property that he's talking about now. But so tell them after the 1031 exchange, you were saying?
Yeah, so after the 1031 exchange, so, as you mentioned, it was a two bedroom, two and a half bath, small single family in the front, then two bedroom, full bath in the apartment unit. I executed the 1031 on Friday.
Which we could have a podcast about that closing, by the way, but we're not going to talk about that closing, but go ahead.
Yes, it was a very interesting closing, but we got it done.
Yes, we did.
I was targeting to have the unit listed on Airbnb by Wednesday. On Sunday night, an opportunity came up where there were some individuals in Houston doing some contract work mm-hmm. and needed a short-term rental, and approached me, you know, made an offer, negotiated, and their offer was, you know, favorable, and I decided to go ahead and rent to them for, which I've been renting. They just left the property, and so I had been renting to them, you know, since middle of February up until this point. So
yeah, they didn't find you through Airbnb.
I would say, I mean, up until this point, they didn't.
Okay.
So this opportunity came up through networking.
Okay. Okay.
So someone knew that I provided Airbnb or, you know, short term rentals. Contacted me, said, "Hey, I have a crew. They have their own restoration company coming to Houston. You know, I heard, you know, we have mutual friends. I heard that you have another property that you're about to list. Potentially, you know, your new listing will accommodate our needs."
Gotcha.
And it worked out. So executed Friday. They were in by that Wednesday. So up until this point, it's been, you know, fully occupied within a matter of a couple of days. Now, I would say those two properties, those two units, and my numbers, I mean, I'm estimating that, you know, initially starting out, they'll be in the 65, 75 occupancy range. Those are a different type of listing in a sense,
mm-hmm.
Just because they're smaller units, not as, you know, not 2,300 square feet, it was more like 1,200 square feet. But I expect them to achieve the same type of numbers, honestly, if not better than the larger property, just because they actually are a little more flexible than the larger property.
Gotcha. So we're getting close to the end of our time, Brandon. So I wanted to get your thoughts on if someone is considering doing short-term rentals, what do you think the X amount of things they need, and I'm saying X because I don't know, because I don't do short-term rentals, they need to have ready, you know, team-wise, thought-wise, information-wise to start that process?
I think one is, you know, list your property by the location. So if you have a property that's downtown, you know, take advantage of that as far as the access to the activities and surroundings. You could have a property that's in Sugar Land or Pearland, you know, that a family, or, you know, or someone that doesn't want to be in the city is attracted to. I think you need to make sure you have good systems in place. So when I say systems, myself, I try and have things as automated as possible. So I'm able to do a lot of things from my phone remotely. I travel quite a bit.
Like what? Like what from your phone?
So I can schedule cleanings from my phone, communication. So even though I live in the UK, I still have my US number. If you call my US number, I rarely keep the phone on me. My UK phone will ring. So setting up a Skype number, setting up a Google number, being able to use, take advantage of technology. So,
gotcha.
You know, use August smart locks, have Nest thermostats. You can remote into your security systems, you know, to be able to see who's going in and out of the home, or if you want to set the alarm or, you know, disarm the alarm. You can do a number of things like that, even down to the lights, etc. And it's more of kind of more of efficiency, but being able to control access, etc. Also, you need a good team. So systems in place, and one step back, as well as I view it, if I was a guest coming into the home, what would I need? You know, what questions would I have? So if you take that approach as far as the information that you provide the guest up front, you can mitigate the number of issues that you would have drastically.
That's a good point of what do you need. I've stayed in short term rentals. I haven't done it on my properties, but you know, everything from the nice little note to pencils to you know, writing paper to soft music playing. I mean, I've seen all kinds of stuff when I've stayed in HomeAway or Airbnb type of properties. The Wi-Fi code plainly displayed, you know, right. Things of that nature.
And one other thing I was going to say, the team. So I have a team that I work with that will clean the units for me. I have a, you know, an individual that is able to address, you know, actions on short notice.
You don't want to say his dad, an individual, but go ahead.
but even without those individuals, also have, you know, contingency plans in place. You know, if
in case dad says, "Nah, son, I'm on a golf course," you call somebody.
Right. Out. So you know that could happen. You know, he could take a vacation.
Right.
But you know, I have other team members that I could call upon if needed. You have a handyman. You have a plumber.
So the same stuff that you need for any rental. I will say this. I do know that they're popping up over time. I know in Galveston there's a couple of companies that specialize in short-term rental property management where they will manage the entire process for you, including the bookings. Of course, you pay for that, and that kind of has something to do with your financial throughput, but you also can just use certain services. So those are out there for those of you that might still be intimidated by the process.
Yeah, so up until this point, I've been, in a sense, kind of managing the units myself remotely, and then, you know, I have my my dad that I'm able to utilize kind of on the ground. But, you know, if the numbers are favorable, and depending on the type of the property, you know, how many units, etc., it could be beneficial to use, you know, a property management service that specializes in short-term rentals. And, you know, you can really take a less active role, because there are times where you will get a phone call, or, you know, you need to be able to filter those things. If you're going to use a Google Voice number, that way you can filter the calls, or you have it routed to a service that can distinguish if it's an emergency or if it's something that you can address later. You just have to go through the thought process, okay, for every situation, do I have some plans in place to address them?
Gotcha. So I want to end with this. So Brandon is not only my resident Airbnb short-term rental expert, but he is also a connoisseur of the liquor. and so I wanted to end with your top three bourbons and your top three other. And I'm serious, folks. He like has a PhD in the science of alcohol. That sounds like really, but I'm serious. So top three bourbons, sir.
I'll give you bourbon whiskey combination.
Okay, so see, right now, he's already being a PhD. He's changed my question up. Go ahead.
I would say Whistle Pig is one of my recommendations.
Whistle Pig, which is what? Because I've never heard of that one.
So Whistle Pig is a bourbon. Okay. It's an American bourbon. Right. Any of the Suntory Japanese whiskeys.
He said that to me before, so he's really on these Japanese whiskeys. He told me that.
Yeah, so the Japanese whiskeys. There's a new one that I've tasted recently. It's Uncle Nearest, and it's actually
The Jack Daniels guy. Is it out?
Yeah, so
I was waiting for it to be out.
Yeah, so I went to a tasting recently with the Uncle Nearest individuals hosted.
Real quick point. Uncle Nearest is the bourbon, or the guy that showed Jack Daniels how to make bourbon. And so someone has bought his estate and started making Uncle Nearest bourbon. So I got to cop that because I didn't know it was out. So.
Yeah, that's correct. I would probably say my go-to my two when I'm out and about, depending on the type of establishment that I'm in.
I.e. nice place or trap house, but go ahead.
So I like Nika Coffee Grain, which is a Japanese whiskey. And then there's one called Monkey Shoulder, which
Monkey Shoulder got to be for the trap house.
pretty good.
Gotcha. All right. Well, hey, Brandon, if people want to ask you questions, do you mind sharing a contact method with them, either via email or whatever?
No, with? Not at all. So, yeah, if any individuals have questions about short-term rentals or want to talk about investing passively, or also interested in, looking to join up with some other individuals and are interested in investing in multifamily properties or single family properties. You can reach me at B Cheatham, so BCHEATHAM at StratfordCapital.com. Or you can reach me at Brandon, BRANDON, at DenardInvestments.com. DenardInvestments.com. investments.com.
And so we'll have Brandon and his business partners back because we're going to do Money May. I haven't even told Mr. Producer that that's the theme for May is Money May. We're in Investor April, Money May. So to talk about that whole raising money standpoint. So I'll have lenders and things of that nature. So Brandon, I want to thank you. I appreciate you rushing home on the train. You live in that, you know, highfalutin London life, you know what I'm saying? Bloke and all those kinds of words. But no, man, I appreciate it. I'm proud of you as always. Glad things are going well for you. Thank you for jumping on. And for those of you that are want to get in touch with Brandon, you can you heard his email addresses. Mr. Producer will put those up at the bottom. And of course, you can always reach me at Kevin at Kevin Riles. And I'm Kevin Riles on the gram. I'm Kevin Riles on Facebook. I'm Kevin Riles everywhere. Just Google Kevin Riles, R-I-L-E-S. Thank you again for investing in us for Investor April. We will see you next week on The Real Estate of Life with Kevin Riles. Hey, thanks for listening as always. Do you have questions about any of the topics I'm talking about? If you have questions, let me know. Email me at Kevin at KevinRiles.com. Again, that's Kevin at KevinRiles.com. I'm going to do a podcast just on the questions that you guys are sending to me. So feel free to send them to me. Again, that's Kevin at KevinRiles.com.